Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Tirumurai Mirisai, and with me is Brother Arvind. We are here to take you through another session of a satsang on Swami's message. We usually speak on the Bhagavat Vahini on two weeks, a fortnight, and on two other weeks we have a general satsang. Last week we had a general satsang, and this week too we are going to have a very, very important message of Swami. It's just going to be an attempt where we're going to try to understand this better, because it's a very profound message like most of other messages of Swami, but it needs a lot of mananam and thinking to be able to bring out what it really means. And we're grateful to one of the listeners who wrote to us asking us if we could do a satsang on this. But hopefully the topic will be revealed as the satsang progresses. As always, we'll begin by offering our loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. We pray that Swami inspires us to speak on this topic in the manner that Swami wants us to understand this, because all said and done, we are going to try and interpret what Swami has said. We're going to look at it as sincerely as possible and try to understand it and share that understanding with all of you. So we pray to Swami that He guides our words, He guides our thoughts, and He inspires us to say the right things, because only He can do that. Let's invite Arvind to join all of us before we head to the satsang. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem, and Sai Ram to all our dear listeners. Let me begin with an incident that most of us as students would have heard in our hostel, in our college. It's a very inspiring episode about this particular student of the Sri Satsang Institute of Higher Learning who had to face an interview panel as part of getting a job. And he was facing this elite panel, interview panel, and they became particularly interested in knowing about Swami. And when they realized that this is a student who has come from Swami's college, they decided to probe him a little more about Swami and different things. The whole interview went on quite well. The student was answering every question that they asked in the most perfect manner, most perfect poise. Mm-hmm. He was comfortable. He was meeting everyone in the eye and speaking. So it was, as I said, an elite panel. Towards the end of the interview, one of the panel members turned to the student and asked, "See, we hear that Swami gifts many things to different students especially. He creates rings, gold chains, and all this He materializes out of thin air. Has Swami given you anything?" Now, this is a question that almost every Sai student faced when Swami was physically here, I think. Now, of course, people have accepted that the physical is not there, so they don't ask this question. But even I remember when I had gone home after doing my 11th standard here during the summer vacations, everybody was keen to know, what did Swami give you? What did He give? Ring? And when they ask, what did He give you? It's usually ring, chain. You can't answer them by saying, He gave me mental peace, He gave me love, grace and all that. Did He give vibhuti? Did He give ring? Did He give chain? Anything? Because that's why anyone would love to be a student, to get physical proximity, nearness and dearness. And it was quite embarrassing. In fact, I must confess, I developed this desire that Swami should give me a ring. Simply because I felt, Swami, can you believe it, Prem? Like, I prayed to Swami saying, Swami, if not gold ring, fine, give me a copper ring at least, or brass ring. You know, it does. It's okay, no problem. As if like, gold is very expensive, Swami. If you feel that I'm not worth the gold, give me copper. As if that hardly matters for Swami. But I was desperate because I felt there should be some token of grace on me. So that is the kind of feeling that comes, because so many times, so frequently you are asked this question when people get to know you are a student. So this student was no exception, and he got asked this question by one of the panel members in the interview board there. So they asked him, what has Swami given? And the fact of the matter was, Swami had actually not given him anything. He neither had a ring or a chain or a bracelet, nothing of that sort. But the student gave a reply that has become iconic today, which has made it an incident that is quoted over and over again. And even now in the satsang, we are quoting that. The student said, Sirs, I come from a very small background, financially or any way. I come from a rural place. I come from a humble family. But sir, such a student, I am able to sit in front of this elite panel, look into each one of your eyes and answer with the utmost poise and comfort. That self-confidence is what Sai Baba has given me. You know, needless to say, he got the job. The panel members were very impressed. And that answer is so revealing to each one of us, because we often count God's blessings in terms of worldly resources, in terms of worldly material things. We do not realize that by simply being in His presence, we are being gifted with things that are far more valuable than gold chains and gold rings. And this student's reply and his experience is actually an eye-opener for all of us. But it's also, apart from being an eye-opener for all of us, it's also a topic opener for us, because self-confidence happens to be one of the integral items of today's theme that we want to take up. And from this episode, it becomes clear that one of the greatest things that Bhagwan, God gifts us, a Sadguru gifts us, the universal teacher gifts us, is this self-confidence. With that, let's explore more about what is this confidence, what do we mean by self-confidence. We all use the term, we all feel it at times, but what exactly is confidence?
Now, talking about that particular incident that you spoke of, the confidence that a Sadguru gives, or in our case, Swami as an avatar, as our divine companion gives, is actually very, very profound. I think that's what we will be going back to in the course of this conversation. But what you said about an educated man standing in front of a panel like this and saying that I've gained confidence, I think that can be said about any form of learning. Because that's why they say education is meant to empower you. You know, when you go through a degree, like in our case, we have done a master's in science or we've done a master's in arts, we may or may not use that education directly in the course of our career. Like, we are hardly using the science that we learned in the direct sense. We're not in the laboratory. We're not synthesizing compounds. But the confidence that a degree can give you, or the completion of a course of education can give you, or the process of learning can give you, that actually is a more concrete thing. You know, that, yes, I can work on it. I can understand a concept. You know, that is the confidence it gives you. And that is why there's a very famous quotation, don't give a hungry man a fish, but teach him how to fish. Because you're empowering him. You're not giving him something which will feed him for the day, but you're giving him an ability which will help him do it himself.
Feeding for life.
Right. So that is what is confidence. So any form of learning, any form of education will actually give you that confidence. In fact, I recall that was the first class that we had, in our bachelor's degree when we joined Swami's college. One of the teachers told this, that when you're going through education, there are many, many things that you're going to pick up. You're going to pick up the understanding of the subject. But all through your course, ask yourself, are you becoming more confident? Because that is one of the things education is supposed to give you. So at the end of education, if you're going out and feeling weak in your knees, then you've not learned what is supposed to be learned. So one thing is, any form of learning, any form of doing something and achieving something in return for what you've done should actually give you confidence.
Wonderful. Because when we see the meaning, when we look at the different dictionary meanings of confidence, what comes out as the assurance of being certain about something. And interestingly, one of the dictionaries said that this assurance of being certain comes from knowing the truth. If we go a little deeper, we realize that the basis of confidence is knowledge of the truth. If we take education, as you put it, once I am studying for a course, let it be science or commerce or arts or whatever it is, when I successfully complete that course, whether, you know, I got 50% or 60% or 70%, whether I'm better than one person in that subject, all that doesn't matter. It just proves to me that I can take up any learning that I wish to and complete it. Now, that confidence can help me whether I wish to learn badminton after that, or whether I want to do clay modeling after that, or whether I want to become a singer. It's a kind of knowledge of the truth. See, I did this and I could do that. I studied and I could complete that course. It gives rise to a confidence that you can do anything. That is more important than actually what that studies did. Because I feel all of us are working on that confidence only. You are not doing, as you said, anything related to biology. I'm not, or chemistry. I'm not doing anything related to chemistry or, you know, finance and business administration that I studied. But the very fact that we went through that and completed us gives us that feeling that whatever I wish to do, I can do. And I think that is a very important process that we go through in gaining confidence, where we do a certain act and to different degrees we are successful in that. As I said, it's not that we are the gold medalist of the batch. It's not that we are the top five in the batch. But just the process of doing something, that in itself is enough to give us a confidence that, you know what, I can start doing something and complete it. So it is a process. Even education must be looked at as a process that helps in building confidence. In fact, if we broaden our view even much more, our entire life is supposed to be that. Our entire life, whatever we do, not just education, whatever we do is supposed to help us build confidence, because confidence is something without which we can't do anything. You know, even a thing like eating. I'm eating food because I have confidence that my stomach will digest it and it will assimilate and give me the energy. If I don't have that confidence in my stomach or confidence in me, I won't have the motivation even to eat food.
And absolutely. For that, any kind of thing, let's say people are tuned into this program and listening. If there is no confidence that I might possibly gain something from this, or I might understand what is being spoken, then, I mean, I will not tune into a Chinese program or a foreign language program and listen to it, because I'm not going to make anything out of it. Because I'm clear that I will not be able to gain anything. So only when that idea that, yes, I can get something what I want, or, you know, as you're saying, that you start a course, or you start learning something, you start acquiring a talent, it always starts with a little bit of belief. It might not be enormous self-confidence or self-belief, but a little bit of belief that, yes, if I work towards this, I can get. It's almost fundamental. And education actually enhances that. You know, there are these beautiful Subhashitas which we learn when we're learning Sanskrit, because it's an easy way of learning the language too, because they're very simply phrased quotations. In one of it, they say that, you know, a learned man is not a stranger in any country. You know, he can travel to any place. Because that confidence that it gives you when you feel that I can learn a language, I can learn a talent, I can learn an art, that empowerment actually grows with any form of education, any form of learning. But even to begin that, Swami says self-confidence is fundamental. And that is why self-confidence is actually much, much more rudimentary than we actually think. We think that, you know, after a certain point, we need self-confidence, just like how we explained in the case of education. But even to begin that education, actually, you need that self-confidence that I can learn something through this process.
Absolutely. As an aside from this discussion, Prem, I am just thinking that it is so important, because it's possibly this thought is coming because I have become a parent now. But when it comes to educating our children, or education as a whole, Einstein had once said that if you evaluate a fish on its ability to climb trees, it's always bound to fail. And that was the way he described the education system, because Albert Einstein was considered a failure in class. And he had been sent home with a letter from the teacher saying, it's better you do something about your child because he's extremely dud.
Right. When you listen to such stories, you feel you're in elite company. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just thinking, if 30 years later, if that teacher had been alive, God knows what she would be chewing a feast of her own words. But that is what we forget, the role of education. We think the end of education is about getting the highest possible grades. I have practically seen with my own eyes within my own family, within my own friend circle, that not necessarily the toppers are the one who succeed in their careers later on. It's not as if failures in academics become failures later on. Because the end, as we correctly, by Bhagwan's grace, zeroed in today's satsang, the purpose of education, yes, Swami says the end of education is character. And in that term character, one very integral part is confidence. It's about building confidence. It doesn't matter if that confidence is built in the child by learning dance, or by studying history, or by doing accounts, or by studying science with the flasks and petri dishes. It doesn't matter what is the instrument or what is the medium through which that child gains confidence, as long as the child is getting confidence. Forgetting that, we give so much importance to the test tubes, to the calipers, to the instruments, or to the medium, that we at times do this at the cost of damaging the confidence of the child. I think, though it is not directly connected to today's theme, it is definitely relevant because we came on education. I think as parents, as well-wishers, as teachers, as elders, when we are evaluating the children, I think we must keep in mind that the ultimate objective of all our evaluation and all the education in any kind, whether it's in a Montessori or whether it's at homeschooling, whether whatever, the objective of that is to build confidence in the child and not anything else, especially those things doing which we damage the confidence of the child should be avoided.
Very true. In fact, in pedagogy, you know, when they train a child to learn something, they always look at this. Not all children are probably good at academics, but it's not that they can never be good at academics. So what they do is they see some other talent where they're good at. You know, it could be in the arts or in sports or something. They use the confidence that the child draws from that particular activity and help them build confidence in academics. So, I mean, it's one thing to say that, oh, you're good at sports, so you become a sportsman. And that is probably, it works in some cases. But in most cases, you can point out to that particular activity where the child is doing well and say that, you know, see, you're able to do this, which means you have the ability if you put your, you know, heart and soul into it. And you slowly teach the child to put it in the, in those particular aspects of learning where they're not able to do otherwise. In fact, that is many, many children are trained that way, you know, when you're able to give that focused attention.
And going forward with what you said, so we see that this confidence in a child or confidence in any person generally, we were speaking specifically about children, but generally confidence can arise from two sources. One is from oneself based on the success achieved, but it can also come from outside, you know, a teacher's good words, support, a parent's encouragement and enthusiasm. I remember, you know, my wife Pooja was telling me that she, as a child, as a little girl, she was considered to be of South Indian descent.
Okay.
And therefore, she was put into the Carnatic music group because she liked to sing. So, in first grade, she was in the Carnatic music group. And though she is of South Indian descent, all her life she has been in the north of India. So, her mastery over South Indian languages is not much. So, she struggled with the lyrics of all the songs that were being taught to her. Mm-hmm. As she grew, so she, her music was good. Her music was good, but her ability with the lyrics were very bad. And she says, one day, as the teacher was teaching under one of the trees in the primary school ground, suddenly a car drove in. And you know, it was Bhagwan. Swami got down from the car, came walking towards them. Now this teacher, it was an unstated but understood rule that when Swami steps into your classroom, because Swami would do that frequently those days, you don't halt, you don't allow the world to come to a close and focus on Swami. You continue as if nothing happened, because you continue with the faith and belief that Swami is always present here, it's just that the physical has manifested. That is the kind of instruction that had been given. So the teacher had to go on, but nevertheless, Prem, when Swami actually comes in the physical form, it's not easy to continue as though nothing happened. So the teacher was very eager, so she went back two lessons to something that she had already taught. And when she began to teach that, her idea was the children will be able to do it very well, and you know, it will be a very good impression on Bhagwan who is watching. But there Pooja was again struggling. She was struggling with the lyrics, and the teacher tried one or two times, and she let down the teacher in Swami's presence. So the teacher, speaking on behalf of Pooja as well as apologizing on her behalf, she told Swami that, Swami, I think we will put her in the Hindustani music. And the teacher had no wrong intentions, but for Pooja as a little girl, it felt like some kind of demotion or being made an outcast. It's like you're not worthy enough for Carnatic music, so go to Hindustani music. While the teacher's intention was just that, you know, Hindustani are easier words, it is different kind of word, maybe she'll pick that easily. So she says that instantly hot tears rolled down her cheeks, she was crying there. Swami came, Swami made Pooja stand up, patted her on the shoulder and told the teacher, give her 1 year's time, she will learn because her music is very good. And physically Swami has never heard her music or anything like that. And Pooja says, now, even to this day, because, you know, she says, the confidence that that gave, it didn't matter whether, you know, the teacher felt I could sing or not. It even didn't matter whether I felt I could sing or not. Because here is my Swami telling that she can sing. And with that one word, you know, later on, as she reached 11th, 12th grade in primary school and then went to Anandpur campus, she got multiple opportunities to sing in Bhagwan's presence. She has sung bhajans in Swami's presence. She has sung songs in Swami's presence. And she says all of that achievement goes down, narrows down to that one particular day when that little girl stood crying, feeling that her world is coming to a close. And Swami spoke. She said that the faith that Swami had in me, that is what resulted in my confidence. So, you know, confidence, of course, comes from within. But outside factors, and especially with Swami, how many stories we know. That is how confidence gets built. It can come even from external sources.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you talk about the faith that Swami had in me, when Swami comes into the picture, it actually is both ways. You know, the faith that you have in Swami, that you know that Swami will not tell simply. As a child, you know, when you look at Swami, you know, Swami sees something which others can't see. That's what we believe, you know, when you look at somebody like Swami. But even in a normal sense, even the people around us, the encouraging words that they can speak when they say that, no, we believe in you, we believe that you can do it, especially when you're not able to do it, when you're not going through it. It has a lot of confidence, you know, to us. I recall coming across this particular incident. It is quoted as an incident in the life of Thomas Alva Edison. But I think when I read up, I don't recall now. It apparently happened to another scientist, but, you know, usually that's what happens in the social media. To give the story more prominence,
You pick a big name.
You know, you pick a big name or a famous personality and attach it to him. But apparently it's a true life incident. I think it's very beautiful. I'll probably read out that forward. You know, we will read it as Thomas Alva Edison, but we're not sure if it is him. So one day, Edison came home and gave a paper to his mother. He told her, my teacher gave this paper to me and told me to only give it to my mother. And his mother's eyes were tearful as she read the letter out loud to her child. Then she reads this letter to the child. You know, your son is a genius. This school is too small for him and doesn't have enough good teachers for training him. Please teach him yourself.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Many, many years after this, Edison's mother died. And he was now one of the greatest inventors of the century. One day he was looking through old family things and suddenly he saw a folded paper in the corner of a drawer in a desk. He took it and opened it up. On the paper was written, your son is addled, which means mentally ill. We won't let him come to school anymore. Edison cried for hours and then he wrote in his diary, Thomas Alva Edison was an addled child that by a hero mother became the genius of the century.
Wow.
Right? I mean, it's a clear thing of one huge section of your, or one huge part of your life does not believe in you, but one person believes in you and is able to infuse that confidence into you and see what can happen to, you know, a person who's probably otherwise would have lived a wasted life.
And if we look at the life of Thomas Alva Edison, see, like you said, you don't know if this forward is exactly Thomas Alva Edison, and it doesn't matter what the name
is. But actually, the incidents which happened in his life are pretty similar. He was sent out of school, his mother was his support.
That is similar. Plus, he's considered the greatest inventor of all times. The number of things he has invented, actually, starting from the light bulb, we all remember him as the light bulb. You know, that's why Watt what is the unit of power consumption. That is how it has come. But I am sorry, I confused it with James Watt. No. But Thomas Alva Edison
invented
the light bulb, correct? But the light bulb itself came at the end of 100 failures.
Right.
And, you know, that confidence that he had is evident from the statement he made when he was doing all this. Because often you try something once, twice, thrice, two times you fail, you can consider failures as stepping stones to success. Three times you fail, you can consider. But 10 times you fail, I think you give up usually. But Thomas Alva Edison achieved the bulb, light bulb, in the 100th attempt. And he had the confidence to say that those were 99 ways I realized that you can't do it. So it is contributing to my education. And also there is the story of how all, I mean, I think this is in the life of Newton or another such scientist. Again, I'm not getting the name, but all his work in a shed where he used to sit and work, it caught fire and burnt away. At the end of which he said, thank God for this, because once all my mistakes are burnt away, I can start afresh. You know, this kind of, we may call it optimism, and people who are cynical may call it wishful thinking. Whatever we may call it, it worked for them and they went ahead to achieve much more. And all this is based on that supreme self-confidence, on that confidence that I can do it. And as you said, that confidence can come from what you have done or from supporting people and circumstances and things around. From wherever it may arise, this much is certain, that it is absolutely essential to do anything, not just to achieve something, not to do something which people say, wow, that's fantastic, but even to do simple things like speak, like talk, communicate, you need certain amount of faith even to eat food. That is the importance of, I mean, I called it faith, but well, it's the same thing, faith. And when you have that faith in yourself, it's called confidence. That is the vital role confidence or faith plays. Because as Swami says in a discourse, without faith, everybody is dead. Vishwasa is the shwasa, Swami says. And interestingly, in Sanskrit, whether it's faith or confidence, it's the same word. Self-confidence is called Atma Vishwasa. Faith and confidence both are called Vishwasa. And Swami says this Vishwasa is the Shwasa. So that shows how important confidence is.
And I look at it this way, you know, whether we have confidence in ourselves or not, let's say that we are trying to learn an instrument, a musical instrument. Either we have the full confidence in us and I can learn this and I go and learn. You know, you see that in some people. There are some people who are very, very confident.
Very driven.
Yeah. When they walk into the room, you know that, you know, oh, this is a very bright person. You know, he's so self-assured of himself. But some of us are not that way. But the fact is, whether we have confidence in ourselves or not, I think if we put enough effort and if we have enough focus, we will achieve it. I think that's the nature of everything. So sometimes when we don't have that self-confidence, it helps for us to have people around us who believe in us, that after they coax us a little bit, you know, when you do it and then you see the result,
they help us to focus.
Right, then it becomes a cycle. The moment you see that my effort does give me the result that I want, as you're saying, that becomes an incentive to put in more effort. So it becomes like a cycle. But that's why, you know, the people around you, and when it is Swami, it's a completely different thing. When Swami is the person who is giving that confidence, as you're saying, you know that Swami is somebody, you know, whom we have, when Swami comes and says that, no, you're good at it, you can do it, I believe in you, the faith that Swami has in us, but it also is the idea of the faith that we have in Swami. That Swami is not somebody who, you know, who is not like another stranger who is coming and telling you pleasant things so that to make your day, right? Swami is somebody who sees something beyond what is, you know, visible to you and me. So when Swami comes and says, no, your music is good, or Swami comes and says, no, you're actually a good speaker, or Swami says, no, you have the ability to pass the exam, the confidence that it gives is something which you can't be explained.
It's very interesting at this point to examine, you know, what is the source of Swami's faith and confidence in us. It simply boils down to how Swami would begin each of his discourses. Prema Swarupulara, Divyatma Swarupulara. You know, Swami doesn't even have a sliver of doubt that there is no difference between him and us. And his logical reasoning would be like, you have faith and confidence that I can do anything. Therefore, I also have faith that you can do anything, because there is no difference between you and me. You know, his encouragement, his support came from knowing the ultimate truth. As we began in the beginning, we said that confidence is the assurance of being certain because of that comes from knowing the truth. When the highest truth is known, I think you just become confident of everything. That is why even you and me will not bat an eyelid if we see Swami go to the most unexpected person and tell that you are going to become this. You know, when Swami in a discourse made an apparent mistake and said that H.D. Devegowda is the Prime Minister of the country, you know, at that point in time, in every sense, you know, whether we look at the personality of a person or whether we look at the political clout a person has, or in every way it seemed improbable that H.D. Devegowda will become the Prime Minister of the country. And therefore, you know, those who don't know Swami 100%, anybody will feel that, oh, Swami possibly made a mistake. And I think when I say those who don't know Swami 100%, it includes 99.99% of us, because there is only a blessed few. As we search for God, Swami would say, I am in search of a true devotee. In fact, even, you know, a correction was offered to Swami, the chief minister. But Swami again insisted on calling him Prime Minister. But that's what happened. Because Swami knows the ultimate truth. And I think when that truth is known, everything is possible. And Swami is trying to leverage on that. Swami is trying to leverage on our faith in Him, that He knows the absolute truth, trying to inject back that same truth into us to tell that whatever it is possible. You know, our own studio, one of our colleagues, Arvind Sai, he's working here. He is a known singer. He's a Prashanti Bhajan Group singer. And he is a known Burakatha artist. He has performed 27 times in Bhagwan's presence and more than 40 times overall, publicly. Burakatha is an art form which involves a lot of singing. And as a singer, he has participated. It was amazing for me. In fact, it was shocking for me when he confessed and said that when he actually started off as a student of Bhagwan, he didn't have the ability to catch the pitch. You know, you scale. When you sing, you have to sing to a pitch, to the tune of the harmonium or whichever melody instrument is there. Right. He said he didn't have the ability. And he said the first time that he did a Burakatha, it was more like the melody instrument, instrumentalist catching his pitch and playing. But Swami was so happy with his Burakatha, Swami said, you sing a bhajan. That day also it was like a fiasco, because he started off key and the harmonium player had to catch what pitch he's singing in. The bhajan group in charge told him that, Arvind Sai, it's wonderful that Swami gave you this opportunity, but that's it. Don't consider yourself a singer, because it's not as if you can practice and come and sing. This was just a one-off opportunity that was given to you because Swami insisted. From then, if we see that today he's a regular mandir singer, that is what Swami does. You know, he, in his own opinion, he says, I had no ability at all. But Swami's faith and confidence, I think like these stories can go on. We can come up with 100 stories of just singers.
No, absolutely. I think this would really go for every bhajan singer, every speaker, self included, all of us. I think in some way the encouragement which Swami has given has really gone a long way. And that belief that Swami gives, and the beauty of this thing is, when we started off, we were talking about children's education. You know, when they're good at something, that you kind of can draw that confidence and make them do things which otherwise they're not very confident of doing. That's again a thing which Swami used to do. Talking of another colleague of ours, you refer to Arvind Sai, Sai Prakash, one of the senior most members of the Radio Sai team. This happened when Swami was beginning Radio Sai, right, in the year 2001-2002, when the proposal had come and Venkatraman sir was made the head. And so he went up to Swami and said, Swami, I need some boys. You know, he was already past 65, 70 then, I think. And he said, Swami, I need some boys to run the whole thing. So that's when Swami wanted to recruit. Some of these boys had finished their education and they were waiting for Swami to give them an opportunity. So Swami called, I think, Sai Prakash and Prakash Bharatkar, the other thing. I think
Prakash
of the studio. And there was, I think, one more boy whom Swami had called for that interview along with GV. So Swami looked at GV sir and Swami said, you ask them, see if they are suitable. Right? So he turned to Prakash and he asked him, so what have you done? So he said, sir, I'm a MSc Maths graduate and I've done this programming in C and Java and all that.
MSc.
Uh-huh. So he, you know, told whatever he is good at. So then Venkatraman sir asked him, so can you do this? Can you do this coding? And he said, yes, sir, I'm very conversant with all this.
This is the other Prakash.
Right? So now it was turn of Sai Prakash. Right? I don't know whether he started asking Sai Prakash or Sai Prakash, you know, didn't wait till then. He knelt down and he went near Swami and he said, Swami, till then he thought, okay, I can do. If Swami says I can do. But after seeing the other Prakash dole out what he is good at, he thought, my God, this calls for a lot more, you know, expertise than I thought of. So he went up to Swami and said, Swami, I mean, I'm a novice in computers. I don't know anything. I don't even know how to start and shut a system.
He said, I have never touched a keyboard.
Right. And he said, I have no idea, Swami. I don't think I'm suitable for this job.
Mm.
Right. Any other employer in Swami's place, you know, after all, this was a job interview which was happening in Swami's presence, would have said, okay, let's look at somebody else or is there anybody else? But see, Swami's response to that, Swami said, so what? You can learn. He said, Swami, this is like, you know, learning from the scratch. You're calling an engineer at the age of 60 and say, okay, you can become a doctor. I mean, interestingly, there are a lot of engineers in the West who become doctors like that, you know, just to pick up another art or another
life skill.
Skill. But Swami looks and says, you know, you can learn. He said, Swami, but it's going to be very difficult. Then Swami said something very beautiful. Swami asked him, how did you learn to play the harmonium? And we all know he's one of the regular harmonium players in the mandir.
And he plays right? very creatively and beautifully.
Right, and he also plays the sitar. And the interesting thing is, both of this he's self-taught. You know, initially he learned by himself and then after that he enhanced his skills by learning from others. Swami asked him, how did you learn these things? Swami said, same way you learn this also. And today, I mean, as colleagues, we can say that he's definitely one of the people who are much, much more skilled than any of us in the regard, in the field of
media.
You know, media. Mm-hmm. Because that's the level to which he has really grown in that field. He has learned so many things. He can handle so many softwares. In fact, professionals who come from outside are really shocked to see how much he has done. I mean, how many different softwares he's worked with.
No, when the head of Discovery Southeast Asia, when he was so impressed that he wanted to pick, and that's what happened. He had a sabbatical of 6 months where he was picked to be part of a group in Discovery. And of course, though he says that he has learned so much from Discovery, we had a workshop in which we had many people from Discovery coming and actually making presentations. At least 2-3 of them, you were also present, started by saying that they have come for the workshop simply by seeing what Sai can do. And when they said what Sai can do, they didn't refer to Swami, they were referring to Sai Prakash. And it was truly, I felt, there were times when Swami would say, my boys are my voice. And this was one example I felt. And all this started from that one day when Swami, you know, actually Swami didn't tell it in so many words. This is a radio show, so we can't show it. But Swami, like, you know, played the harmonium with one hand and played the sitar. And harmonium is played horizontally while sitar is played vertically in the same way. Swami showed with one hand how you learned this and how you learned this. Like that, you will learn that also. That is what Swami told him. So it was so beautiful.
Right, absolutely. I think that is the confidence which gives. And that is actually a very interesting point, because when you're talking about self-confidence, it is not about confidence in a certain skill or confidence in a certain ability. Self-confidence is very, very fundamental. So if you develop self-confidence in the field of education, in the field of art, in the field of sport, you can be sure that the same self-confidence can be applied even in the field of spirituality. And that is why Swami, you know, when you look at the different students, why Swami encouraged somebody to be a sportsman, why Swami encouraged somebody to be a speaker, somebody to be a, you know, musician, because all of that helps in the spiritual path. The moment you develop any kind of self-confidence, the belief that I have the ability to achieve something if I focus on it, that belief is useful even in the spiritual journey. And that's why even for the spiritual path, Swami says, what is fundamental is self-confidence.
Absolutely. In fact, I am reminded of one interesting point, but maybe we'll wait for that for after this break. Dear listeners, we will be taking a quick little break. On the other side of which, we will continue our discussion on self-confidence and the other steps. And of course, if you are unable to finish this satsang today, Before the end of today's satsang, we will reveal what the topic is also, so that we can continue the same topic the next week. So, see you very soon after this quick little break.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the middle of a very beautiful reverie of Swami's message, a very important message. What I find very interesting about this particular topic we are discussing is, it's one thing is to look at Swami's message and say, oh, this is so profound. But then when you look at Swami's message and you feel that, oh, this is what Swami was doing to us all the while.
Mm-hmm.
That actually fills you with a lot more joy, and you know, you you also look forward to what is happening with your life.
It gives a better understanding of my life is my message and your life is my message. Because we understand that Swami's message is not a theoretical one. It's a practical one that Swami lived out every moment of his life. Not only he did that, he ensured that whether we realized it or not, we were also living it out every moment of our life. It's so beautiful.
Right. And just talking about that, I recall Ravikumar sir, the current warden of the Vrindavan campus. I'm not sure of the details of this incident, but something he narrated once. Now, we all know that he had when he was doing his research, it took a little longer than usual for that period. That time, most of the people would finish in, I think, 3 or 4 years, and it took a little longer for him because of, chemistry is always so unreliable in that sense.
I remember they used to tell, chemistry is a mystery that should be made history.
In fact, even when you were talking about, Edison's quote of, I found 100 ways of not doing this particular thing, I was thinking of my MSc dissertation.
In chemistry.
Right. When I did for 6 months and I did not get any results. Right? There was no results to show at all. So disappointed, I went to my guide and I said, sir, what do I write in the report? You're supposed to submit a report at the end of it. So he said, yeah, you just write that I tried all this, it didn't work. So I said, sir, that's so disappointing. He said, no, don't think like that. To document something and say that this does not work is as important as documenting something and saying this works.
Mm-hmm.
He says in research, there is no difference between this and that. Both of it is equally valuable. Right, and that gave me a lot of confidence. After all, I've not wasted 6 months of my life. I've contributed something to science. Going back to Ravikumar sir, he was taking a little longer to complete this research. So he was saying that one day he was taking a walk, I think in the Hillview Stadium or somewhere. He was walking by himself. And he was kind of musing and thinking, and he was having a conversation with Swami within. And he said, Swami, it's taking so long. And, he always has this thing of, Swami has given me education. Swami has brought me up from my school days. So I should contribute to Swami. I should, become a teacher or in some way start giving back to Swami in response to what he has showered on me. So he would always feel that, Swami, I'm taking so longer to, get to that state. So he felt that Swami is telling him from within that the reason why you're not able to complete your PhD is because you lack in self-confidence. So he was a little taken aback, He knew clearly that it was not his mind, because that was not something which was he's thinking about at all. Self-confidence is not something which was in his mind. So then he said, Swami, but then what do I do? What should I do to, develop the self-confidence? And then Swami told him that, why don't you start giving speeches? Why don't you start giving talks? And that was again something which he did not think of. So he said, Swami, but how do I do? I can't go and ask somebody that I want to give talks or something like that. So I think he left it there. And it started raining or something that evening, so he rushed back to the hostel. And I guess when he went back to the hostel or the day after that, he got a call from the administrative block saying that, for the upcoming Dashara festival, they wanted him to be one of the speakers. And that is how his career as a speaker, especially during the Vidwan Mahasabha, took off, literally in that sense. Of course, it's not that he spoke only then, he's spoken many times in Swami's presence even before that, but that we all know speaking in Sai Kulanthal is something different altogether. It's not
absolutely
like, speaking in the studio or speaking to an audience of 100 people. Kulanthal is a completely different experience altogether.
And how many times has Swami called Ravikumar sir out of the blue,
right,
made him speak extemporaneously? The other day when I was speaking to him, I just told, sir, you must have delivered at least some 200-300 speeches, right? And he tells me, I think about 600 in Thrai Vrindavan itself. I was like stunned.
Oh,
means I thought he would have given 300 talks, and he says 600 in one venue only he has done. It's amazing.
No, absolutely. When I heard this from him, the first thought which came was, when you look at somebody like Ravikumar sir or the other many, many speakers and students we hear during the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha, when they recollect their learnings with Swami, you feel that they are contributing so much to Swami's, cause, that they're standing there and they're spreading Swami's message. But if you look at what happens behind the scene, it's actually even in that process, it's Swami who's giving you something.
Swami is contributing to
you. You are not giving anything. And sitting here, you and I speaking here, we think that we are spreading Swami's message. It really hits you. Swami is giving us this opportunity to develop our self-confidence, because as I said, you don't need to develop a separate self-confidence for the spiritual path. It is the same self-confidence which is going to be used there. And, you know, Swami never ceases to give and we never cease to receive. It's always this way. Our hands are in the receiving position and His hands are showering.
Now, speaking of self-confidence, I'm reminded of an interesting query, a question that I faced once. This person was asking, when we tell our children to be self-confident, we also tell our children to have faith in Swami. Are they not counterproductive? I mean, because faith in Swami is like having faith in something that's in Swami. It's not in me. One is faith in Swami, one is faith in me. So, how do you tell them to do both? And when I was pondering about this, one of my classmates narrated this beautiful episode. In fact, he has narrated this in Bhagwan's presence during one such Dasara where, you know, Ravi Kumar sir got an opportunity. This classmate of mine, his name is Hemant, he got this opportunity to narrate it in Bhagwan's presence. And when I was pondering on an answer for this question that this person had asked, speech of this classmate of mine has got transcribed and it's on Radio Sai.
Mm-hmm.
So I happened to read it and it was such a beautiful answer. So he was narrating how during 1995, 60th birthday is it? Or 70th? 1995 is 70th birthday. 70th. So during Bhagwan's 70th birthday, Swami gave a special blessing. He would give group interviews to every class. Like, you know, it is class 9 group interview, class 8 group interview, class 10, then each first year undergraduate, second year undergraduate. So class wise, they would get interview in that interview room and all the students would just cram in, and you know, it's a miracle how that same room will expand to fit in as many members necessary. So Hemant at that time was in class 8. So it was the day when the class 8 student would be getting their interview with Swami. And you know, Swami, the master that He is, He knows how to engage the postgraduate students, the research scholars, as well as the primary school students. And He speaks at their level so that everybody takes home inspiration, love and grace. And so with the 8th standard student, Swami began by telling a story. And you know, Swami, the dramatic storyteller that He is, He started talking about one little sparrow that was seated on a huge banyan tree in a large forest, and how it was seated actually on a tiny twig that was connected to a sub branch which was connected to a big branch of this mighty tree. And He was talking about this sparrow. He built up love in the hearts of all these children for this little sparrow, and a sparrow is such a lovable bird. It's such a small, cute little thing. He built that up, and then He spoke about a storm that came, that grew in intensity so much, it began to pour and rain and, you know, lightning, and the breeze was so much that even though this banyan tree was strong, it began to shiver and shake, it began to quiver and quake, and finally it began to get uprooted. And Swami said, the whole tree got uprooted, and that little twig which was connected to that sub-branch, which was connected to the big branch, which was connected to the tree, everything came crashing down with a loud thud. And at this point, you know, Swami stopped, a dramatic pause. And all the students who have now grown very fond of this little sparrow are wondering what happened to the sparrow. Instead of revealing what happened to the sparrow, Swami asked them, what happened to the sparrow? You know, Swami put the question, and Hemant narrates how we were so eager to know what happened to the sparrow, and you're asking us, no, Swami, please break the suspense. Tell us what happened to the sparrow. Swami said, nothing happened to the sparrow. It just fluttered its wings and flew away. And then, you know, after giving this beautiful story, which apparently ended in an anticlimax because nothing happened, Swami gave a most profound message. Swami said, nothing happened to the sparrow because it didn't depend on the tree. It depended on its own wings. When it depended on its own wings, nothing ever happens to the sparrow, even if the entire world around comes crashing down. And then Swami went further on to say that the two wings that we should always have in life are the wings of faith and self-confidence. And you know, when I read this, I realized that it is impossible to fly with only one alone. Faith alone is not enough to fly. Confidence, self-confidence alone is not enough to fly. And when we think deeper, we'll realize that self-confidence is nothing but the faith in God within us. And faith is the confidence in God that's outside. So it is just two different words to denote the same thing. And as we said in the beginning of the satsang, no wonder that in Sanskrit, it is the same term, vishwasa, that depending on the scenario and situation, it is interpreted as confidence or it is interpreted as faith. So that is the answer that I sent to that person, that based on this and based in, you know, in my humble opinion, I don't think faith and self-confidence are contradictory. In fact, they are the same thing. In fact, they are the two sides of the same coin. A coin cannot exist without two sides. In the same way, one cannot exist with confidence alone. If you have self-confidence, you automatically have faith. If you have faith, you automatically have self-confidence. If you lack either one of them, it means actually you lack both of them. You have neither of them.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the difference when the person who is injecting confidence in us is Swami, because it's, you know, Swami can be absolutely confident about you, but if I don't have faith in Swami's words, that confidence is going to be nothing to me. Like, you know, you will just dismiss Swami as, Swami, what do you know? What problem I am facing, what do you know? I mean, that's what I think some of us are silly enough to do. We say that, no, Swami, you have confidence, you're just being good-hearted, but, you know, you have no idea what I'm going through.
No, take the case of Ravi Kumar, sir. Right. He's struggling in his doctorate chemistry and he's wanting some help to finish. And Swami will start speaking, means, what's the connect?
Absolutely. So much depends, I mean, that self-confidence and faith is so much interrelated. Especially when Swami is the person whom you are looking to build your self-confidence. But the idea of this whole, whatever we are talking about, self-confidence, is eventually you come to the point, especially if you've seen enough, success in life, let's say, that I've learned the art of singing and I've learned it, or I want to learn a new software, I've learned it, or something as simple as I want to drive a car and I've learned it. Automatically you come to this conclusion that it's just a matter of me putting effort and focusing on whatever I want to achieve. Anything can be achieved only if I put the effort. So that self-confidence becomes very, very universal, as what we started off with. That idea that if I want to achieve something, I can achieve. So the next step becomes, do I want to achieve it or not? And just the same way we were telling, the same self-confidence in all these worldly things can be directed even towards spirituality. The question is, do I want to invest my time and effort in spirituality? And most of us choose not to, and that's why we are building our self-confidence in all kind of other things. So the moment we establish this fact that I can achieve anything if I keep my heart on it, the question becomes, now what do I choose to do?
And, you know, going further from what you said, if we look at some of those who have achieved tremendous success in the worldly sense, it's amazing how at the peak of all that success, what they wish to do is something very, very, what in the eyes of the world is considered as spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
There have been kings who have given up their entire kingdom and just walked away. You see examples like that. You see people with great wealth deciding to just give it all away. I mean, you have worked all your life to achieve that. At the end of it, you just want to give it away. I mean, I think that is what self-confidence ultimately leads you to. It doesn't matter from where you start developing your confidence. As you keep growing and growing, every kind of self-confidence, wherever you're... That's why I think they've just got one term for it called self-confidence. They don't call it education confidence or cricket confidence or anything like that. Because it is ultimately that. It is a confidence that possibly starts moving you towards yourself. And here when I say self, I'm meaning the capital S. Because if we look at this term self-confidence itself, it's so beautiful. Because when you say self-confidence, we have understood what is confidence. What is self? Depending on what is our concept of self, that confidence evolves. If we consider ourselves as the capital S, it leads to that. It leads to the confidence that Swami had. If we consider ourselves as a very tiny S, as like one just ignored, neglected, below average human being, then that's it. We become the people who are in desperate need of the kind of confidence and faith and the courage that Swami would infuse. So the confidence gets tempered by our concept of self. And I feel in whatever way, when this confidence reaches a height, reaches a peak, it starts shaping our concept of the self itself. And that is why we see people who have achieved the ultimate power, ultimate wealth, or whatever it is in the worldly sense, they start giving it up in pursuit of something what they consider as higher and purposeful. So, however we may start off with, self-confidence is definitely the foundation. However, as we spoke, it might start off in any manner possible. But ultimately, it will lead us towards moving towards our own higher reality. And that is probably the reason why Swami says that to enjoy the mansion of self-realization, you need the foundation of self-confidence. I think with that, I'm finally releasing the topic for those who didn't see the theme on our website. We are discussing Swami's quote where he says, the mansion of self-realization is constructed on the foundation of self-confidence, with the walls of self-satisfaction and the roof of self-sacrifice. So, in the discussion so far, what we definitely have realized and hope that all our listeners also agree with us is the fact that irrespective of whatever we wish to achieve, spiritually or worldly or any way, even for as mundane things as eating, sleeping, walking, reading, talking, we need self-confidence. Self-confidence is definitely the foundation.
Absolutely. And the idea of what Swami would say, the thing which is common in all of these four words, self-confidence, self-satisfaction, self-sacrifice and self-realization, is the idea, the concept of self. And the whole thing depends on what is your concept of yourself. And that is very, very complex. You know, when we look at ourselves, yes, we've heard from Swami that you're divine. We've read in so many spiritual books. So somewhere that idea is there that I am essentially divine. You know, whether it's perfect or not, whether I'm completely established in that thought or not, that's what a self-realization will come to that eventually. But somewhere that concept or that information at least is there. But along with that, we have this idea that I am so-and-so, I am so-and-so's son, you know, I am a master's in science, or I am an editor, and I am this, I am a singer, or whatever it is. So that concept of that self is so very complex. And that is why even worldly success can actually lead to the self-confidence, because our concept of self is dependent on all of these things. But eventually, we start letting go of all the other concepts. In fact, a very beautiful thing which Swami does is when you're talking about choice, as I said, I can achieve anything in the world. What am I going to invest my time and energy on? That depends on this definition of the self that I give myself. If I say that I am so-and-so's son, automatically my duties get skewed in a certain way towards a couple of people. The moment I say that I am a citizen of this country, that definition of myself gives me a certain roles and responsibilities. If I say I am a Swami student, I am a Sai devotee, that lays a little bit of responsibility on me, and that will skew my time and energy in a certain manner. So what I choose to do now starts getting defined slowly by the refinement of this idea of self that I have for myself.
Absolutely, because you know, even as you were telling this, I was reminded of some of the singers who learned singing under Swami's guidance and support, and have gone out and actually done well in the world, become professional singers, good singers. But you know, one particular singer who keeps coming to my mind is Brother Ravi Kumar, who has been part of many Bhavanjalis, Nada Brahmams, and he's an integral part of the Prashanti Bhajan group. One thing amazing that I have seen is how much ever success people have achieved in the world in that sense, they still come, and even though some of them are senior to Brother Ravi Kumar in age, they still somewhat, you know, kind of salute him, you know, they are in admiration of him, they hold him in high esteem and respect. And when we look at it, as you said, it's about the choice. Because all said and done, even if we look at some of the greatest singers of India, Bharat Ratnas, M.S. Subbalakshmi, you know, there's so many, Ustad Bismillah Khan, or we see other such gems like Zakir Hussain, Ustad Zakir Hussain. All of them, they have come, and when they have performed in Bhagwan's presence, some have done it in Bhagwan's presence, some have done it in his omnipresence, you know, after 2011. Every time they say that this is one of the highlights of their life, and this is what I think is the wisdom that arises in making a choice. Where would I like to offer this talent of mine? And we are convinced, I am sure, that that is how it is, that the greatest way, the best way one can sanctify the ability that comes, whatever may be the ability, whether it's singing, whether it's speaking, whether whatever it is it finds its fruition in offering it to God. And that is what the greatest singers that we talk about, whether it's Tyagaraja, whether it is Ramadas, all of that, they are not amazing because they had a silken voice, nor are they famous because they made the most difficult compositions. They are all revered. In fact, for Tyagaraja Aradhana, there are 700 top musicians from India who come, sit together and, you know, offer homage to Tyagaraja. Not because he was a great composer, not because he was a great singer, not because he was melodious, nothing. Simply because of his devotion to God, he offered it to God. And, I mean, that is a point to think about, because whatever be the confidence, I think it meets its highest destiny, the most beautiful destiny, when it is offered to God. Any talent, any ability.
We are actually very, very fortunate to, you know, when you say this, it does not sound like an alien concept to us. You know, when you say you do it for Swami, you offer it to Swami, I think that's the advantage of being in Swami's fold or being associated with Swami. This kind of idea is not so outlandish. But, you know, when you tell to a normal person that, you know, you can choose what you want, it becomes very difficult. I mean, this is probably the ultimate idea of what you come to the penultimate. As you're saying, even people who have ruled many lands or kings who have accumulated so much, suddenly they feel they just let go of everything and they look for something more. The idea is they are in search of something which is more than that confidence. And that is where I think the idea of self-satisfaction comes.
Mm.
When our idea of self is very rudimentary, you know, oh, I'm this body, I'm so and so, then it's actually, you find satisfaction in very, very mundane things. But the nature of these satisfaction that comes from mundane things is, it evaporates with time. That's how it is. Swami says, anityam asukam loke. The satisfaction that you get from anything that is worldly is ephemeral by nature and it is fleeting. You know, it comes and goes, it comes and goes. So you, at some point you say that, no, I'm not getting the satisfaction. So that's why eventually you will finally turn to God. But in the process, you know, when you look at a person who is going through this regular journey of karma, I think this is how that choice is made. That you start seeing, where will I find my satisfaction? And when I say self-satisfaction, again, that self is this complex self. You cannot be satisfied by doing only what gives you happiness. If your parents are going to be unhappy, if your spouse is going to be unhappy, or your child is going to be unhappy. So this idea of self is so complex, and that makes the idea of self-satisfaction also so complex, that you're looking for satisfaction of all of these people who are contained in the self. And that's how you start making decisions, and I will pursue this, I will put my energy and effort in this.
You know, we have already started building the walls of our mansion on this foundation of self-confidence. Before we build the wall further, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break, because I think by now it is evident that we will not be able to conclude this discussion in this satsang. It will be definitely spilling over to the next week, which is wonderful in itself, because it gives an opportunity for all our listeners also to participate with their thoughts, their feedback, which we can incorporate in next week's satsang. So we'll take a quick little break and continue with building the wall of self-satisfaction after this little break.
Okay.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We had just begun our building of the wall of self-confidence, self-satisfaction. As we discussed, there's no doubt that self-confidence is the absolute foundation without which we can't build anything. With self-confidence, you come to that feeling that I can do anything. You know, it's like, give me a bucket list. Give me all the desires, I can fulfill it. I can do it. That is what confidence is about. The feeling that I can do whatever I choose to do. But after that has to come self-satisfaction, because, you know, practically thinking, it is not possible to do everything. Not in the sense of capability, but in terms of the limited time, resources, energy available depending on our self-concept. For instance, I was just thinking, suppose I have to make a wish list. 100 things that I wish to do in this life. And I am told, yes, give it and it will all be done. So I offer that, because Swami is telling this to me with full faith, I'll give it to him. And as we learned, faith and confidence are two ways of seeing the same thing. So whether I am confident that I can do anything, or Swami, we can give this to me. So I make a wish list of 100. Just to speak in an extreme kind of case scenario, what if in my wish list, there is a desire that I want to see a bomb explode, okay? And what if there's a desire that I want to see peace and harmony? Now, here are two desires that are conflicting with each other. Though there is a capability that I can do both, I can either blast a bomb and see it, or I can either see harmony. There is a chance, but I can't have both. I can't have both because they are opposites. They don't last together. It's like saying I want to see light and shadow. So then comes the question of what is my priority? Now, in my list of 100, where is watching the bomb explode? Where is seeing peace and harmony? In the same way, for example, if I have in my wish list that I want to be the top cricketer in the world, and I also have that I want to be the top hockey player in the world. Now, you know that how much of practice, intensity, and this goes into becoming a top-notch cricket player or a top-notch hockey player. Now, which is higher in my wish list? Is cricket player 20 and hockey player 31, or is hockey player 20 and cricket player 31? Then automatically I have to give up one for the sake of the other. Now, these are very evident choices that I have to make in my wish list based on priority. But if we scratch beyond the surface and go deeper, we will realize that this doesn't happen only in conflicting things within the same field.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if I have in my wish list that I want to be a top-notch scientist, you know, winning the Nobel Prize, and I also have that I want to be a World Cup winning captain of an Indian cricket team, okay, or the Brazilian football team, these are also conflicting. Though both are not just sports ideas, they are conflicting. I can't. I have to choose which I want. In fact, if we keep going deeper and deeper, we will actually realize that if I want to go all in and achieve something of the highest in any one thing, then all my life is enough only for that. Though I have the confidence, I have the ability, I can achieve all 100, I can't achieve all 100 because of the limited time, energy, and resources that we have taken up in this birth. So therefore, there's a difference between saying I can achieve 100 and I can't achieve 100. They're not contradictory. I can achieve the 100, meaning if I choose to pick any one of these 100, I can go all the way in and get it. But I can't achieve 100, meaning I can't go all the way into all these 100. Even when an avatar that comes down in the physical frame doesn't do that, you know. Swami, in the physical sense, it's not like he displayed superhuman strength, superhuman height, everything. He was the best football player, cricket player, nothing. Though he has shown glimpses of what is possible with that divinity. I'm reminded of this episode from Swami Vivekananda's life, mm-hmm. where they were standing on board of a ship. And, you know, because those days the journeys from India to America would take so long, it'll take a month on the ship itself. So they would come up with different activities to pass time. It is said that in one of the places, I don't know whether it's on the ship or in the dock, he saw some students, some children actually, taking a pellet gun and shooting clay ducks in the water. And the most successful one was able to shoot about 3 or 4 clay ducks out of 10. And then when Swami Vivekananda took the gun, this is a recorded episode, he shoots on all the 10. And they ask him, where did you learn shooting? He says, no, I didn't learn shooting. And then how are you able to do this? He says, no, I learned concentration. I learned concentration, so whether it's in shooting or this, little skill, if I pick that up, then I can actually do that. So in that sense, when we develop that absolute focus and concentration, yes, I can do all the 100. But I have to, you know, Swami Vivekananda is not known as an ace shooter. He didn't win Olympic medals in shooting. In the same way, though I have the capability to do all the 100, I have to choose which I want. And I think that is where this concept of self-satisfaction comes, because I can't pick all 100. I have to pick based on my priority. And this, again, this priority is determined by what I consider as my self-concept. I mean, this priority could be based on what my mother likes, what my father likes, or it could be based on what Swami likes. It could be based on what I have the deepest interest. It could be based on what my pop idol or my sports idol is doing. Yeah, it is all based on this complex concept of self. But definitely, there is some kind of, you know, restriction or limitation that I have to voluntarily put in order to achieve completeness or wholesomeness in that one thing that I pick.
The whole idea comes from, you know, the acknowledgement of limitations which will be there. The moment we say that self-confidence is anything can be achieved, that does not necessarily mean, I mean, as you rightly said, anything can be achieved and everything cannot be achieved. Both of these actually exist in the same sentence without any contradiction, because everything, like, let's say that you want to become, as you said, the best cricketer. Everybody can become the best cricketer, but we know it for a fact that some people have it more easier. And, you know, of course, it comes from so many different things. In fact, Swami would say that when we come across these child prodigies, you know, somebody at the age of 14 who is a very good singer, or we have these 14-year-old cricket players who go into pro cricket, and like Sachin Tendulkar or some of these great cricketers who start very young. Swami would say this, you know, when you have a lot of desire, when you put a lot of effort in a certain field, a bit of that talent actually gets carried over to your next birth, right? You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. That's how some people are born with a talent, or some people are born with an ability that with a little bit of effort, they achieve much, much more when compared to another person.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this will be there. So when you say that I want to become the best cricketer, somebody might be able to achieve it with a little bit of effort. I might need 20 years to achieve that. So I have to ask myself, that is why the idea of satisfaction also involves time. Will I be satisfied if I am a good cricketer at the age of 40? Or rather, I would be a good scientist at the age of 25. So actually the idea of satisfaction also involves a bit of time frame, involves a bit of how much am I going to invest into this? Am I ready to invest so much of my, you know, parents' money into this, I mean, for that matter? I think all of this gets involved when you're talking about the choice that you're making. And that is why that satisfaction becomes so complex, and an acknowledgement of all these limitations also is very, very important.
One more level of complexity that comes into self-satisfaction is, it is not as simple as seeing what is it that satisfies me, as we already hinted at in our discussion, is my satisfaction. Now it depends on so many things. What do I mean by saying I'm satisfied? If we look at the dictionary definition of satisfaction, it defines satisfaction as fulfillment or the pleasant feeling that we receive, that the pleasant feeling that we have when we receive what we worked for or desired for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is defined as satisfaction. Now my satisfaction itself may depend on other people's satisfaction.
Right.
Like I may want to be a cricket player, but I may choose to be an engineer simply because my father wants me to be an engineer, and for me his satisfaction is more important. Or the other way around. You know, everything might be in place, and my father might be a businessman and he wants me to inherit that business. But I may want to be just a gypsy traveler who is vlogging. You know, there are people who are just traveling around the world and making videos on their different travels, and it gets YouTube hits and it monetizes there, and they earn their livelihood moving around like that, which parents may not be comfortable with, because such a life, they may choose not to marry. I mean, even the choices whether you wish to marry or not marry, one might say ultimately it is because what satisfies one individual is what influences that individual to make the decision. But this satisfaction itself is dependent on so many other satisfaction. We have cases of people marrying in spite of, I mean, not marrying in spite of their parents getting hurt. We have cases of people marrying in spite of they cruelly crushing down all their ideas and aspirations simply to please their parents. Every kind. I know I'm just picking up the parent-child kind of relationship. But there are multiple relationships that come. So what is it that satisfies you itself is very complex. And I think we will leave this to be carried forward in the next discussion, because as I said, our satisfaction is dependent on so many other satisfactions. Then which one is it that we choose? How do you know which is the right one to choose? Is there a guideline that Swami has given us? Of course it is there. All this is just the suspense build up that I'm giving for the next satsang. So how do we use that guideline? How do we choose on whom to please, what we should do? How do we decide what satisfies us? All that we will discuss in the next satsang as we build this wall. We have built it halfway. We will complete this wall and also hopefully do the roofing and tiling in the next satsang. So till then, listeners, unless Prem has any final few words to add, which he nods to say no, nothing much. So on that note, we would like to conclude. As always, you can write to us with your thoughts, feelings. As Prem made it clear right in the beginning, this is our interpretation. This is what got inspired within us as we sat for a couple of hours over many days discussing what this could possibly mean. So it is not watertight. It's not complete. It's not comprehensive. It is not rigid. So you're welcome to share your thoughts, your feedback, your ideas. We will try to incorporate as much of that possible in the next satsang. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. With that, we offer this humbly at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan with gratitude and love. We will end with a song, on the other side of which will be the segment Love to Love.
Sai Mahadeva.
Shadi.
Mahadeva.